All right, good morning. Let me call the core MPO May meeting to order. The May 3rd, 2024 meeting of the Coastal Regional MPO will now come to order. The core MPO is holding in-person meetings with a visual option for non-voting members and members of the public. For staff, board members, and members of the public who are participating, today's agenda is broken down into the following items. Approval of the agenda, committee reports, actions items to be presented by staff, other business, status report on current projects activities, information report, other public comments, notes by the chairman, adjournment. For each agenda item, action item, the staff will make a presentation. The board will then ask questions of the staff for clarification. During the public comment section, the floor will be open to the public to discuss matters on the agenda. For members of the public that are online, if you wish to comment on an item that the board is considering, use the raise your hand feature on your screen. For persons attending the meeting in person who desire to speak, staff will provide you with a speaker's card. At the appropriate time, I will recognize you and staff will direct you to the microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by me, you will be notified that your time has expired and I will recognize the next speaker. Do we have a quorum? Quorum is established. This meeting will now come to order. Our first order of business is the approval of the agenda. Is there a motion?
Second, Mr. Chairman.
Properly motion and second that the agenda be approved. Are you ready for any questions? Let us signify our vote. Please identify yourself beginning at the far my far right. Identify yourself and your vote.
Mains, yes.
Macmo, yes.
Jarrett, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Elder, yes.
Kegler, yes.
Scholar, yes.
Turner, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Callahan, yes.
Hutchison, yes.
Milton, yes.
The agenda is approved. I didn't miss somebody over there on the other side of you, Tanya, did I?
All good.
Hmm?
You got everything.
No, Tanya's the last one, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure there wasn't nobody on the other side of you.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I just wanted to make you aware that Mayor Van Johnson is on.
He's online?
Online.
Okay. Right. I'm glad. Mayor Johnson, how do you vote?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I did that, but I was in error. All right? And let me explain. If you're voting, you cannot be online if you're a board member. All board members to vote in, we have to be present. That's the governor's rule, not Chester Ellis. All right? So
acknowledged.
Okay, thank you. I just want to make sure we're all on the same page and working out the same playbook. All right? So let me get this thing going. Committee reports.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
ACAT met in April but did not have a quorum, so was unable to endorse the action items.
Okay. Any other committee reports?
CAC met also in April, and there was a quorum, and they endorsed all action items.
Okay.
The TCC chairman is not here, so I'll just represent, just talk about the TCC. We actually approved the, endorsed the MOU, draft MOU and the TIP amendments. At the time, there were three projects for TIP amendments. When Asia will do the presentation, just want to let you know, we actually, GDOT retracted one of those amendments. So TCC actually endorsed three amendments.
Okay. Executive Director report. Executive Director.
Just ahead of time, I want to take time to thank the staff. This process has been incredibly long, and they've just done an incredible job with regards to getting everybody coordinated. And this, I'm talking about the MOU as well as the boundary. So I do want to take the opportunity to thank everybody for their hard work on getting that done, and look forward to the next steps in this process.
Okay. Let us move on now to the action items. Approval of the February 28, 2024 Core MPO Board Meeting Minutes. Is there a motion?
I move to approve, Mr. Chairman. Palumbo.
Second.
Please identify yourself.
I'm sorry. Milton, second.
Oh, okay. Been properly motion and second that the minutes of February 28th be adopted and approved. Are you ready for the question? Please signify your vote starting to my far left.
Milton, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Callanan, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Turner, yes.
Scholar, yes.
Michael.
Maines, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Cody, yes.
Jarrett, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Melder, yes.
Kegler, yes.
The chairman, yes. All right, let's move right along. Adoption of the updated MOU.
Good morning, board members. Morning. And we have been talking about the MPO boundary and MOU since last February. So first, let me just let you know, just notify you, the governor approved our MPA boundary. So this is the approval letter. And as you see, we actually adopted our boundary on February the 28th, and this is adopted the boundary, and now governor has approved it. So this will be the exhibit A of the MOU. For the MOU, we just, let me just open this up. So basically, we adopted our boundary. So that means some new members will be added in. So the counties, so I added in the signature, the entities that will have the signature page will do the signatures. The counties of Bryan has been added. All of Chatham County's municipalities already in. And the modal representative, CAT, GPA, and the airport already in. So these are the newly added ones. So the county of Bryan, the city of Guyton, and city of Rincon, and the city of Springfield will be the new signature signers for the MOU. So those are added in. And then we also revised the language about description of the MPA, the boundary. So just describe what the actual boundary looks like. So this is revised the language over here. The MPC's executive director, Melanie's title, has been changed to executive director and CEO. So which has been updated over here. And then we for the advisory committees, we are getting rid of the ACAT and the CEC. I wouldn't say getting rid of it, but we are consolidating CEC and the ACAT as the Transportation Equity and the Public Involvement Advisory Committee, and they will be overseeing our participation process, the participation plan, Title VI plans, and environmental justice and limited English, all those related activities. And we are also adding a new bicycle and pedestrian advisory committee just to oversee or just to keep inventory of the bike and pedestrian and trail projects, their implementation status, and the grant application. So this is the new advisory committee we're going to establish. And the TCC and ADVAC remain the same. Don't change. The MPCs or MPCs Transportation Department, basically the core MPO's roles and responsibilities, we added in the federal requirements that we have to do the Title VI plan and limited language assistance plan, environmental justice report, etc. Previously, we are doing that, but we were not outlining in the MOU. So now we're adding these functions that the Transportation Department does. And these are the signature pages. So after today, after you adopt this MOU, we will get rid of this like draft watermark, and we will send the MOU to all of our member agencies for like Chatham County, City of Savannah, all of the municipalities, and all the three motor representatives. And so you'll be received this. We hope to have you provide us the signature page, basically execute this by the end of June, so that we can forward the whole package to the governor. So as you can see, these are the signature pages of the existing members, and I added in all the new members that I've been added in, highlighted in red. And the MOU has, the Exhibit A has been updated. Hold on, just so many pages, okay. Exhibit A in the MOU has been updated to reflect what the Quorum Peel Board adopted and what the governor approved. So this is the Exhibit A. And Exhibit B
go ahead.
Okay, the Exhibit B, the fee calculations we reported to you last time, but just want to make sure. So everything that has been updated is highlighted in red. So basically for the fee calculation, the base amount for each governmental entity is $1,000. And for the three counties, we decide that each county will decide how to split their fees. So Bryan County and City of Richmond Hill will split their share based on the population within our Quorum Peel boundary. Chatham County will also split the county's share of the membership dues based on their respective population. And the Effingham County will pay for all of its three municipalities. And then for the three modal authorities, CAT will pay based on the 60th percentile of the county's municipalities' contributions. And Georgia Ports Authority and the Savannah Airport Commission will pay 70th percentile of the county's municipalities' contributions. And the Georgia DOT will pay the 10% of the transit planning, Section 5303 local match. And then all the others, the advisory committees we will not pay, and MPC will not pay into this. And I did include the calculation in this. Also, we sent this information to you about 2 weeks ago, just in case that you have like last minute updates. So far, I haven't received any comments and questions, but Kat did ask me to send this calculation, so which I did yesterday. So this is basically it's based on these numbers, the final fees. This is based on the fiscal year 2025 UPWP, which will take effect on July the 1st. So this is based on the local match members. The local match member is about like $300,000. So you can see your numbers over here. Staff today is asking for the board adoption of the MOU so that we can move on, so that we can send letters to all the participating agencies and the members for execution. Any questions?
All right. Are there any questions from any board members concerning the MOU? No questions? All right. May I have a motion to adopt the MOU?
Make a motion. We adopt the MOU. Scholar.
Second, Conan.
Proper motion and second that the MOU be adopted. Are you ready for the question? Please signify your vote, and let's start with the mayor.
Johnson, yes.
Kegler, yes.
Scholar, yes.
Turner, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Caledon, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Milton, yes.
Chairman, yes.
Thank you.
All right.
So we will send the chairman the resolution for execution after this meeting, and then after that we will send, so expect our letters. Thank you.
All right.
Just one point of notice. We need to get the signed documents back by the end of June.
And that's from all the municipalities?
That's from all of the municipalities.
All the municipalities.
So just wanted to make sure you knew that so you can put it on your calendars. We need it before that time.
All right. Make sure when you send it to them, you make that notation. Put a cover letter or something that gives them the date. Just don't say the end of June. Give them the date.
No, it's June 30th, but we will definitely make sure we have that date.
Yeah, give them the date.
We'll have that date on there, but I thought I would take the opportunity today, since you all are here, to let you know that when you get it, if you want to send it right when you get it, that's great, but we need to have it by June 30th.
All right. Moving right along.
Okay, I will present the TIP amendments. So in March of 2024, GDOT requested TIP amendments be made for the SR-404 Spur/US-17 at Back River Project, and Chatham County requested a TIP amendment be made for the Girard Avenue Improvement Project. And so I will go over the details of those amendments. So in terms of the public participation process, this today's meeting was advertised as a public hearing on the Savannah Morning News. And we did go through our public comment period from April 10th to April 24th. We have not received any public comments on these TIP amendments. In terms of the specific details of what the TIP amendments are for the Spur project from GDOT, they requested construction funding amounts to be increased and to update the funding code from Y001 to Y001 and Y001F, and then also for that construction phase to be moved to fiscal year 2026. And then here's just a table showing those details. For the Girard Avenue Improvement Project, Chatham County requested the row phase be moved from fiscal year 2024 to fiscal year 2025, and then this shows those changes. So this is the current project page, the original one, and then this is the updated project page with those requested amendments for Spur/US-17 at Back River. And then for Girard Avenue, this is that original project page. And then here's that updated project page as well. And then here are the further details, such as our public involvement materials. We have to send out two public notices after the Quorum PO board meeting was moved from April 24th to today. So we have one with the original date and then one with the new date after that meeting was moved. In terms of the consistency with the 2045 MTP, both projects are consistent with the MTP. And then these are the original requests made by GDOT and Chatham County. And so those are the TIP amendments. Are there any questions?
Are there any questions from board members? All right, and since we advertised this as a public hearing, may I have a motion to open a public hearing, please?
Second, Milton.
And properly motion and second that the public hearing be open. Are you ready for the question? Please signify your vote starting at the far left.
Milton, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Callanan, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Turner, yes.
Scholar, yes.
Gigler, yes.
Melder, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Jarrett, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Mains, yes.
Johnson, yes.
Chairman, yes. All right, are there any members of the public who have signaled that they want to make comments by raising a hand? I don't have access to that. Did anybody call in? Are there any members of the public? All right. Are there any members of the public present who would like to make comments before we move on? Present? None? None. May I have a motion to close?
The chairman, I make a motion that we close the public hearing.
Palumbo, second.
Probably motion and second that we close the public hearing. Are you ready for the question? Please signify your vote, starting with Mayor Johnson. On my
Johnson,
right.
Yes.
Mains, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Cody, yes.
Jarrett, yes.
Palumbo,
yes.
Melby,
yes.
Kegler,
yes.
Scholar, yes.
Turner, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Callanan, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Milton, yes.
All right, the chairman, yes. All right, we have reached that. We don't need approval for it. Do we need approval to adopt it?
Oh, yes, yep. We do. I apologize. Let me All bring right. that back up.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. Don't worry, I'm coming. All right, let me have a motion to accept the TIP amendments as presented to us today.
Milton, so moved, Mr. Chairman.
Hutcherson, second.
Probably motion and second that we adopt the TIP amendments that presented to us today. Are you ready for the question? Please signify your vote starting to my far right.
Johnson, yes.
Yes. Scholar, yes.
Turner, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Callanan, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Milton, yes.
Chairman, yes. All right. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we're ready to move along. Ms. Barcoda.
We are working on the most important document, the Quorum Bill, which impacts the federal funding to our area, and that is the 2050 long-range transportation plan. So I'm just going to let you know that we are at the project selection and prioritization process at this stage. Let me just go through this. So today I'm just going to update you on where we are in terms of this development process. So we are developing the 2050 MTP, and now it's the final stage financial plan development. That means the revenue estimates. So we need to know how much money we're going to get, and then we need to know what kind of projects we're going to have, and then we have to prioritize those projects because we don't have unlimited revenues. And then eventually we'll develop the financially constrained 2050 MTP, which we will update you in June on this. Our final adoption is August 7th, but we're going to give you a draft list of the fiscally constrained MTP in June. We decided that because most of the highway projects will use the money from Federal Highway Administration, and the federal transit revenues, transit projects will use the Federal Transit Administration money, FTA money. So we decided to just separate this out so that which is easier for project selection and project development. So first, let me just tell you the revenue estimates, how much money we get. So immediately after our February meeting, GDOT, because we adopted the boundary, right? So GDOT sent us the revenue projection based on that boundary. So this is the information that GDOT sent us. You notice that the projects estimates and maintenance separates, revenue projections are separate. Because maintenance, as you go, so you have a lot of maintenance projects. So we decided to keep this. And what GDOT does is for the 2026, they use 2%, revenue projection. And then after that, use 1%. And then also we did a lot of coordination with GDOT. They were saying, the maintenance project over here doesn't include the LMIC funds, each municipality receives, that doesn't receive the LMIC funds. And also these revenues are matched funds. That means you basically assume, federal percent is 80 and then the state match is 20%. So these are matched funds already. So our total revenue is about $1.4 billion, as you can see. So we actually had a meeting with TCC on March 21st. We say, okay, these are the revenue. What kind of adjustments we need to make? So what the TCC decided is that, okay, we want to keep the revenues for project maintenance separated, but instead of using 1% as the annual growth rate for the revenue projection, we want to use 2%. This is still very conservative. We will use like 2%. But for the 2025, 2026, and 2027, we use the TIP numbers because TIP numbers are tied to specific projects. So if you use the original revenue in 2025, you're not even able to cover the projects already programmed in the TIP. So we decided that for the 2025, 2026, and 2027 projects, we use the TIP revenue. But we also adjust the revenues for Bryan County and Effingham County sewage projects already because those projects will move from the statewide TIP to our TIP. So we need to include those projects as well. And then also, let's just add the state and the local funds, additional funds that we will make. So we assume that no additional House Bill 170 funds, that's the state funds. But for the local funds, we assume that's $3 million for the base year. And then we have a annual inflation rate is 2% to be consistent with the revenue that GDOT sent us. That's only because normally, previously we provide a local match at 20%, but we constantly have to overmatch. Like a project during, the right-of-way phase, you actually is like more than 50% match. So that's the reason for us, but because we constantly have to come up with additional local match, for the federal dollars. That's why we assume about $3 million, in 2025 and apply for 2% and then assume no other funding sources like grant discretion funds. So that way, if we receive that, we can treat that as additional funds, in the future when we do amendments. And maintenance costs, we assume no LMIC funds. So with all these adjustments, these are just some tip amendments. Asia just presented to you like two tip amendments. We also know City of Savannah got the reconnecting community grant funds. So that will be included in because that project has to go through our MTP TIP process before the funds can finally authorized. And another funding source, that we got yesterday, actually, FHWA just notified us, the Georgia Ports Authority got $15.3 million for EV charging. Those have to go through the MTP and the TIP as well. Because I got those yesterday, I didn't have time to enter that information. But these adjustments need to be updated anyway, because in June we might have a more tip amendments. So these are not final. Just want to let you know what kind of adjustments we are making. We are also adding all the Effingham County and Bryan County projects. But we checked in the STIP, there are three Bryan County projects, but they're not located in our boundary. So they're not going to be added in. But Effingham County, I added in all these Effingham County projects and in which years. So these revenues will be added into the different years. So these are the adjustments that we're going to make. And I'm just going to show you the final estimate. Remember, when GDOT sent us the revenues, the total revenue is about $1.4 million, right? $1.4 billion. So after our adjustments, so we adjust the annual growth rate of 2%, and then we use the 2045 MTPT information. We adjusted those numbers in cost in 2025, 2026, 2027, and then we added in additional revenues from the local governments. And so you have the total highway revenue estimates about 1.87. So $1.87 billion. This how much money we are going to play with. Allocate. This is how much money that we know for highway projects. So we're going to allocate. But this money have to be allocated into three cost bands because the federal requirements that you have to do year of expenditure. So we decided to allocate the funds into three cost bands. So cost band one covers 2025 to 2028, to 2032. So it's 8 years and it overlaps with the current TIP and the next TIP. So the total cost band one, revenue is about $585 million and cost band two covers 2033 to 2045 is 9 years as mid-year is 2037. Because we have to use the mid-year to calculate our revenue and also project costs have to be escalated into this mid-year as well. Remember that. And cost band three also covers 9 years and mid-year is 2046. So cost band two revenue is about $587 million and cost band three is $701 million. So this is how much money we will have. But cost of one-to-one, remember, we already have a lot of projects programmed in the TIP, and those occupy a lot of funds. So after we did, I tried in plugging the TIP numbers and some of the cost band one projects. So in cost band one, we actually, for specific projects, we only have about $100 million available to allocate. So just want to let you know. So basically we have about $100 million in cost band one for specific projects. And in cost band two, you have this much. So, but for this, this is the total, but we decided that, just to be in the like same way as the 2045, we actually have some set aside, because, we do have a lot of operational improvements. If you just, they cannot compete with the like capacity projects, but they're smaller. They can be easily done or faster done. So we decided we will still keep them separate so they don't compete with the capital projects. So we decided we will keep the maintenance as it is, and the projects under projects we have three set asides. One is the operational set aside. We use the 12%. As the basis, because that's based on the lump sum category that we have in the current TIF, that's about 12%. We decided that 12% will be used for operational improvements. Those will be signal coordination, intersection improvements, turning lanes. So those are the kind of projects. And then we also decided we will have a transit set aside. Remember, I said CAT will receive mostly from FTA money, but we do flag some FHWA funds to, so these are additional funds from FHWA that will be flagged to CAT, to help them do, vehicles or capital bus improvement, bus stop improvement. So previously in 2045, we used, $750,000, for each year for CAT. That's based on the diesel bus. But we learned at the TCC, special call to TCC meeting, is the electric bus is about $1.3 million. So we assume $1.3 million each year that will be allocated to transit. And then for bike, a pad, trail, remember we have a bike pad committee established just to oversee the implementation of bike pad projects. And previously we used the Y301 funds as the basis, and that's about like $1 million. And then we did a comparison. If we use the mode share, what is the mode share? In Chatham County, the mode share is about 3%. But that's for people 16 years older and above. But if you know like children, they actually like under 16 years old, they walk and they bike a lot. So Chatham County has the highest mode share, is about 3%. Effingham County is about 0.7. So Bryan County is also pretty low, but we decided to use the higher percentage so that we can make some improvements to bicycle and pedestrian improvements. So we used the 3% mode share. And then besides those set aside, the rest of the money will be used for specific projects. So we allocate those as you can see. And this is the total cost of band 1, 2, 3 for specific highway projects. So in cost band 1, you have about, 418 million. But remember, I already told you that we plug in the TIP numbers. So basically this one is about $100 million. But for in cost band 2, you have 457 million dollars, and cost band 3, you have $549 million. Operational improvement set aside, so we have all this, the total is about $208 million. And then non-motorized set aside, the total is $74 million. And transit is about $34 million. So these are all of the revenues that we are going to allocate to projects. And this is the highway side. For the transit side, this is how, because we don't have the GDOT intermodal to give us the like revenue projection like GDOT highway office sent us. So we have to make some assumptions. So this is the TIP number. We decided to use the TIP number as a starting point. As you can see, CAT actually has TIHUD, grant or flex funds. So we decided to use the year that doesn't have any like grants or additional funds, just to use the regular formula funds. So we decided to use 2027 as the basis, and the total is $9.6 million. But these numbers include operations, because our 2050 MTP is a capital project, the capital plan. So it shouldn't include the operational improvements. So we have to subtract the operational revenues from this. So this is how we did the, we're plugging all the TIP capital projects. And so this is the revenue, the revenue that's tied to them. So basically in 2027, the revenue is $7.8 million. So we want to assume this is about $7.8 million as the base to start with. And also we have to adjust for, Bryan County and Effingham County. So they do have some steep information that included. So Bryan County, you see the annual cost is like a little bit below $500,000, and Effingham County is the same way. So I actually sent an email to Coastal Regional Commission and the Georgia DOT Intermodal Office asking them how much, because in the STIP, they're not like in our TIP, CAT projects, you have ITS, you have a bus replacement, you have specifics, but theirs is like lump sum. I said, how much do I need to like separate this out? And then their answer is, we might not have that because we just provide transportation services. We don't purchase like a bus or something. So basically, we need to probably assume $0. But CRC said they would get back to us still later. But there might be some minor adjustment. But right now, we just assume $0 for Bryan County and Effingham County because they're not purchasing any capital improvements. So basically for that, and we decided, like 2027 as $7.8 million, so we decided to probably use, to be more conservative, we use 7.5 as the basis. And then just like highway, we apply 2% annual growth rate. And then for the 2025, 2026, and 2027 TIP years, we use the TIP numbers. So you can see this is the trends of the revenue. In cost band one, we have about $83 million. And in cost band two, we have $85 million. And cost band three, we have $102 million. So this, I mean, this number is not final. We'll be still adjusting them. But that's just to give you a bulk figure, and the methodology that we do the cost estimating, or revenue estimating. I saw Faye has some questions.
No, I was just going to make a comment to you on the CRC numbers that they gave you, where they gave it to you lump sum. One of the things you might want to ask them is they do get an allocation now through the Georgia Transit Trust Fund that is both, it's flexible, so it could be used for operational cost, and I'm sure they use it mostly for that. But they also have dollars in there for their capital vehicle replacements because they do have those as well.
Okay.
And so they should be able to at least break that part out for you.
So that will boost our transit revenue a little bit.
And I think to go along with what she's saying, I think what you need to find out from CRC, how do the 5309 and the 5311,
they don't receive 5309. They receive 5311. Yeah.
But since we now have Effingham County, we have Bryan County, all right, we may need to ask that question if the 09 don't come in. If it can come in because they're considered rural. And I know it's a whole lot of,
yeah, I think
it's a whole lot of conversation about whether it's urban or whether it's rural or whatever. All right. But that is a question that has to go to GDOT. Okay. And GDOT would have to make that determination and take it on the federal level for us.
I sent the email to GDOT. I haven't received any response from GDOT yet.
Okay. You haven't gotten an answer.
Yeah.
Yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm still coordinating with them, but this is basically the train of thought. Just let you know how we do the revenue estimating.
Right.
But after we receive the information from GDOT and CRC, we will adjust these numbers. But probably wouldn't be that much.
Well, let me ask you in the same vein, too, since you already corresponded with GDOT, how does the bridge maintenance, does it fall in here? It's not in here at all?
Bridge maintenance?
Totally, yeah. The Talmadge Bridge maintenance project that's going on, that GDOT is, is it falling in this?
That one is already in the TIP.
Okay, yeah.
That one is already in the TIP. So remember, I adjusted, how do I minimize this? For the highway project, remember how I made adjustment?
Right.
In the revenue? So you can see if you use the obligation-based numbers, for projects in 2025, you only have like $45 million. But look at what we have. We have 124. So that means all the funds that go with that project is already accounted for. It's already included.
Yeah, well,
that's the adjustment.
Your numbers may change when you get an answer from GDOT.
Yeah, that's why we can probably in June.
Right.
If there are any TIP amendments, we will accommodate all those TIP amendments. Like Asia just gave you the presentation on one of those, like Back River Bridge, the cost increased by $26 million. We already counted that. We already counted for that.
Great. So now, can the adjustments you had to make, in including the $15 million you just found out about yesterday?
Yes. Yes. This one doesn't include that because I only got that information yesterday.
But what my question though is, how soon will you allow the board to know what adjustments made after the things you got yesterday and the day before when they had put in?
GDOT's got
to respond to you. I understand that.
Yeah. I think in June. Because we have to adopt our 2050 MTP in August.
In August, right.
So we have to finalize. I mean, basically the revenue and the particle list and everything should be relatively stable in June.
So by the end of June, you expect GDOT would have given you all the answers that we are seeking?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I want the board to know exactly when they can expect it. So when you get it, you're going to fan it out to everybody on the board.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're going to report to you what final adjustments we have.
I just want to make sure they understand it's coming.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So those are the revenue for highway and the transit projects. But how do we do project selections? Now, how do we allocate those two projects? So now we are in the project selection process. So how do we do the projects? So for the highway projects, we review the existing plan and study recommendations. Remember, I showed you previously a big matrix that shows where the project come from, and the projects including cost band one because we are under 2045 MTP. So cost band one projects that are already in the TIP or still being implemented or haven't been implemented. So those have been under construction or completed or removed. So like I-16 widening, I-16 I-95 interchange. Those no longer there. But the projects that in cost band one and in the TIP, like Back River Bridge, like Les Rattle Creek Bridge Replacement, Bull River Bridge Replacement, Project Drain, those are still carried forward into this 2050 plan because they haven't been done yet. And then cost band two and cost band three projects are placed in that big matrix. And then we select the matrix. So if a project has several checks, a check. And that's a priority project. So that way we got about 50 projects and also some of the projects are pretty big. So we have to break them down. Like I-16 widening, the recommendations is I-16 widening from I-95 all the way to State Route 67. So we break it down into three segments. One is like I-95, between I-95 and the Pooler Parkway. Because GDOT already has a PI number for that one. So basically GDOT already has a project for that one. And then the next segment would be from Pooler Parkway all the way to Effingham County and Bryan County line. And then since Bryan County decided not to join us, so I have to cut out from the county line all the way to State Route 67. So we have to cut that out. So basically that's how we select the projects. And then we got about 50 projects selected for further analysis. And of those projects, about 30 projects are capacity building projects and then the rest are intersection improvement projects or operational improvement projects. So we will eventually for those operational improvement projects, we will include them in the vision plan. So because remember we have that operational set aside. So if GDOT decides to take on one of those projects or Chatham County wants to take on one of those projects, and they will be considered consistent with our 2050 plan. So our next step is to prioritize the 30 capacity projects so that we can fit them into the cost band 1, 2, 3. So this is basically just to show you an example how we do.
Let me stop you right there because I think some clarification need to be done. All right. Because you mentioned now the widening of I-16.
Uh-huh.
And when you get to the Bryan County line, it's not included. It's not because they're not a part of this organization, but because they took that portion out. That portion of Bryan County is not a part of.
Yeah, it's not a part of us, so we cannot spend our money there. Yeah.
I want to make sure we understand that.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. You know, rather than saying because they are not a part of us, but they are a part of us. But what happened was.
Yeah, the boundary. Yes.
The
boundary. Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's
yes.
What I want to make clear.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
They set the boundaries and they excluded I-16 where where it ends at Effingham County and goes into Bryan County to Bullock County.
Yeah. So, thanks for the clarification. So basically, the segment outside the cornfield boundary is cut out. So basically, I'm just showing you an example of how we do the project selection. So we actually have all of these, studies and the plans. So like Coastal Empire study, the travel demand model, Corampio's, freight plan and the congestion management process and the Corampio 2045 plan and the vision plan. So you see the six columns over here, basically they're regional. So the project selection, like the vision plan, they are previously identified needs. And the 2045 constraint plans, so we already have a deep analysis on those before. And the Coastal Empire studies is four counties regional. Travel demand model is three counties regional. The freight plan is regional. And congestion management process is three counties regional. So we use those as the basis for the initial project selection. And then North Bryan County, they have a transportation study. Chatham County did a TSPLOST list. Bryan County also has Belfast, Keller Road, transportation assessment, and FEM County have a transportation master transportation plan. And we also did the 307 corridor study, Stereo 21 access, a management study, and US 80 corridor study. So those sub area studies just to confirm. So if they confirm with the, like six regional studies, that's good. But if they only fit in one, like if they only fit in FEM County transportation plan, but it doesn't fit in like congestion management process or freight plan, they're not selected. So basically the six columns take precedence. So this is how you see check. So based on that, we selected about 30 capacity projects and about 20 or more than 20 operational improvement projects. So these projects will go through the next steps. That is the project prioritization. And the project prioritization, we want to go through like three tiers. The tier one is the needs assessment. I would talk to you about that a little bit. And then Anna is going to do the sustainability resiliency screening. And then Asia is going to talk to you about the equity screening. So we want to be, because resiliency and equity are like new emphasis areas from federal funding. So we decide that instead of just going through needs, we want to go through all three screening process. So we are going to probably start to do that next week. And then after the staff reviewed our scores, and we will try to convey a special call TCC meeting so the TCC can review these scores and review these criteria and make sure that everything's right before we present it to you. So that's for the highway project selection. For the transit project selection, we checked the 2045 MTP and also checked with CAT. Seems like the needs are pretty consistent. So like bus replacement of a fixed route, bus replacement for paratransit. You have ITS and then the like facilities and a ferry boat. So these are pretty consistent. But there might be some minor adjustments as we're working with CAT on this, and also we're working with like GDOT and the CRC if we have additional projects to be added in. So this is how we do the project selection. And then after we select the projects, the final step is to develop the financially constrained plan. So basically allocate all of our money, then the money that we have and then to the projects. And that we will present to you, in June. But I just want to mention, even if we use 2% annual growth rate for the revenue allocation, for the revenue projection, we decided to use 4% annual growth rate for cost estimating because we learned this hard way. I mean, Truman Park linear trail, that was, I mean, I think it's more than 4%, right? But the 4% is because we documented some information according to the GDOT commissioner. Some maintenance projects that the cost increase like more than 84%, and some other projects were like more than 120%. So it's out of control right now, but we are looking long term. We're looking long term. So the federal guideline is if you're looking long term, like 4% might be a good assumption. So we will apply for 4% for the project cost estimate. So basically, if you have like I-16 widening identified, and if it will be in cost band 3, and we will apply the inflation 4% as annual inflation rate. So the inflation factor would be about 2.28. If it's in cost band 2, the inflation factor is about 1.6%. So this is how we do this for the highway. And this is just an example to show you how we plug in how we allocate the revenues balanced on this. And also, remember we have a 3 set aside: operational improvement, transit, and bicycle and pedestrian. So we have the proposed policies. So like, for example, operational improvement will be considered consistent with the 2050 MTP. So for example, next time we want to do a Y230 call for projects, and City of Savannah wants to do like signal coordination. Let's just assume like 37th Street or something. So as long as that project is in our vision plan, and then City of Savannah is going to be meeting the local match, and then 37 is on the functional classified roadways, we will consider that to be consistent. So operational, so we have that flexibility. For the transit projects, because CAD also applies for our funds, and if they want to do like charging stations or electric bus, and they will be considered consistent. These are the languages that are associated with that. And then for the transit, for the bicycle and pedestrian projects, so they have to be consistent with the non-motorized transportation plan. That's why I encourage all the municipalities, if you have a project and you might pursue federal funding for that project, make sure it's included in the non-motorized transportation plan, because the non-motorized transportation plan will be a part of the vision plan. So you're not going to have specific projects listed, but you're going to have this big list. So whoever wants to implement one project, we will consider that consistent if you're in if the project is in the non-motorized transportation plan. And then the most important, you got to commit like a local match. So those are the set aside policies. For the transit, I worked with Mary. So this is the project list that Mary provided to us. So we still need to like finalize this, but this is like how we allocate the current revenue that are presented to you for potential projects. So this will be relatively stable form in June.
Wanted to just mention this comes straight out of the adopted master transit plan, is entirely consistent with that, as well as with the transit development plan, zero emissions bus plan work. So it's all, this is drawn completely from publicly adopted, previously developed plans over the last year.
Yeah. And then eventually, I think in the 2050 plan, we also have to do performance-based planning. So basically, we want to make sure that these projects selected are contributing to meet the requirement for the transit asset management and transit safety plan requirements. So just want to let you know. So basically, this is the process for this. And then the next steps, we will finalize the revenue estimates. Like I said, like $15 million we got yesterday still needs to be added in, and then input from CRC and the Georgia DOT intermodal office still need to be incorporated in. And then we will complete the project prioritization. So we will try to start the prioritization next week. And then after that, we will develop the cost estimates for like new projects. If the project's already identified in, for example, like freight plan already has a cost estimate, we might have some reliance on that. But if not, we do have a cost estimating too, and we will use that and also separate out the preliminary engineering phase, right away phase, and construction phase and plug them into the cost band. And then we will show you the financially constrained 2050 plan, the draft. Because after that, we need to go to all the communities, get their input. So the final plan will be in August. So final plan, that we have the final list. So if you have questions, and contact me and Melanie on this. So now let me just get back to the the project selection I talked about, we have three screening tiers. The first tier is a needs, and the second tier is resiliency, and the third tier is equity. So I just received this file from Genesis, who's doing the needs assessment. And this is just give you, and this is still to be finalized before we start the process, but this is just to show you. So for example, if you see this is the travel demand model that GDOT provided us. So you see the red. So the red area, we have higher scores, basically. So the greens, probably you have lower scores. So basically you can see 11 surface ENF, it got a score of 10, D, 5. So this is how it goes. The vehicle crash rates. So of course, where there are a lot of crashes, and that's take precedence because improvements need to be made to those areas. So this is how it goes. And then bicycle crash rates, we also have this data. We all have all this mapping. So we're going to assign them different scores just based on this. So basically the needs, we want to consider the level of service and truck traffic and freight connections, crash rates. Evacuation route probably will be considered under resiliency, but pedestrian and bicycle crashes as well. Accessibility, connection to population employment centers, that probably will be considered under equity. And state of good repair, like bridge ratings or something like this. So we're still finalizing this, but hopefully we will start the prioritization next week. So I'm done with my part. So Anna will give you the presentation on the resiliency part. Any questions on my part?
Let me ask this. Now. Let me make sure. Are there any questions now about the need? She's covering just the need portion of the presentation. No questions?
Question.
All right, now we can move on. All right. Question. Did I hear somebody?
Yes. Chairman.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
This is Dr. Shabazz.
Okay.
I have a question before she goes to the next part in reference to the cost band one, and I just want to be clear that and all of the wonderful information and great reporting like always, but just to narrow in just a little bit on what my conversation and my statements and questions are, will be narrowing down to Project Duren, if you can.
Project Duren is already in cost band one because Project Duren right. is already in TIP. So it's in the pipeline.
Let me get a question.
Let me finish.
What's your question?
My question is, how much revenue will be allocated to Project Duren? And if you can't do that, you know, zeroing down into Project Duren, if you all can get that information back to me. And the other question is, just like the percentage rate for estimating on the transit side for cost estimating, and you're adjusting it up to 4%. The adjustment for the inflation rate, you all are adjusting up to 2%. I was wondering why the percentage rate can't go up a little bit higher for the capital projects. That's a question of mine. And the other question is the operational. In the maintenance column of your chart, my question is, the Project Duren hasn't started. So when it pertains to Project Duren, what is the maintenance estimate, and how does that work?
All right, give her a chance now. Give her a chance to answer. Because I heard three questions. Anybody heard more than that?
Yeah, I heard some questions too.
You heard three?
Yeah.
All right. You got them?
Okay. The first question is regarding the cost estimating for Project Duren. Mm-hmm. We will work with GDOT and the City of Savannah on the final cost estimate. Because the previous cost estimate has Project Duren, I think the construction is like $30 million. I don't think that's valid right now. So, because for cost band one projects, if the construction is not included in the TIP, We need to work with the GDOT and the City of Savannah, on that part to see what the final cost will be. And we will include the final cost.
Right.
Okay. So that's for part one. Another question, maintenance. Maintenance, we're not going to touch anything about maintenance because maintenance is just set aside for GDOT, and then the local jurisdictions just, if you do the resurfacing or something, that's where that money, comes. So your maintenance project wouldn't compete with the capacity projects. So because that's why we keep the maintenance revenue separate. And then The third question about the cost estimating, you think that 4% is low? We think 4% is low as well, but that's the federal guidelines say if you don't have a better numbers, because the federal requirement is like, it's better for you to get the, like inflation rate from the local, like if we have a bids based on the bid information. But if you don't have information, 4% is a good assumption.
Okay.
And then we also move some monies that so that they wouldn't lapse. Then we also move some monies to the project they're in.
That's something that we haven't talked about.
Hold it. I don't want to get you ahead of time.
Yeah.
All right. I want us to stay on the page. And what I'm honestly hearing, Mr. Rector and staff is that you need to get with the City of Savannah, GDOT, and y'all need to go over all the aspects of Project Durant.
Yeah.
Just very, very clearly, I think the one of the issues that we've run into, and I think the City of Savannah is also from just general conversations that I've had, when we were talking about the Truman Trail and looking at their cost, is that some of the estimates that they received, they were low. And I don't think they even factored in enough money for what the change in cost is.
Well, see, that's what
so
I'm saying.
That's we will get with them again,
right,
because
right.
we need to get a number. But without having that number, then we always use what the federal basically inflation number is, which right now is 4%. We think it's probably more like 8 to 10%, just
right.
based on what we're seeing. But we can't use anything higher than that, not once we've got a baseline or more information from the city, from bids and things of that nature that they're getting in from folks that they're contracting with.
See, and so since and now that we have folks viewing this with us, I think that is incumbent upon us to make sure that you all get with the City of Savannah, get with GDOT.
Yeah.
Before we put anything out there, because if once you put it out there, now you're not going to be able to get it back.
Let me just show you this. I have this MTP fiscal constraint plan example.
Okay.
So all the numbers that I didn't highlight in yellow.
Right.
Those numbers are tip numbers. So basically, I'm pretty good. I feel good about those numbers because those are the numbers that GDOT gave me, so I know. But you see the project during, actually over here, project during, yeah.
Now, can she see that? Can she see it on her screen?
You see highlight?
I can bring it up, Chairman. Yes, I can see it.
We're going to make that larger so that you all can see it.
Let me just make it larger.
Yes.
So you see.
What I'm asking, though, is Dr. Shabazz is coming virtually. Will she be able to see that on her screen or is she just on the phone?
I can see it on my screen, Sharon.
She should be able to see that on her screen?
Yeah, if she's connected, if she's calling and using her computer, she should be able to see it through her screen.
Okay, all right. That's the other point.
Okay.
You can go ahead.
So I just want to let you know, all these, you have these blue numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The blue numbers are the ones that I feel confident in because those are the tip numbers,
okay.
including the Effingham County projects that I have already moved in here because the Effingham numbers from STIP. And then other blue numbers come from our tip. So I feel confident on those. But all the ones that are highlighted in yellow, those are the ones that we need to check. So we already know all these cost estimates need to be checked.
Okay.
So just want to let you know that we're taking care of that.
All right, Dr. DeBad, did we get to all your answers?
You did. Thank you so much, Chairman. Thank you so
all
much.
Right. No problem. All right. Anybody else now? Once? Twice, we're gone. Let's go on to the next part two.
Okay. I also want to mention that for the top 50 projects that we selected, it's already it's it's shown over here. So you if you have some time, you can just go down and this list and to see these are the selected projects that we're going to do next step for prioritization.
And if anybody like me, I told them they got to blow that up so I can see it. Even with my glasses, I had problems seeing that little stuff.
You probably need to like do that after this meeting.
Can't be a 9. Okay. Y'all got to get somewhere near the 12 or 15 so I can see that. All right.
Okay.
And I got helps in my always. So we have to. All right, let's move on.
Okay.
Hi, good morning. My name is Anna Broadmarkle-McQuarrie. I'm going to be presenting on the 2050 MCP resilience information, specifically regarding the financial plan, the Federal Highway Administration greenhouse gas rule update, and project prioritization. Just briefly, what is resilience? FHWA defines it as a capability to anticipate, prepare for, respond to, and recover from significant multi-hazard threats with minimum damage to social well-being, the economy, and the environment. You may see this definition come up a little bit later. So when we think about resilience, it's really that ability to bounce back to natural hazards and also man-made or human hazards as well. And so natural hazards can consist of increasing temperature and precipitation, sea level rise, storm surge, flooding, whereas man-made hazards could maybe be infrastructure failures, cybersecurity threats, terrorism, active shooters, hazardous materials. So we have two images here. One in Savannah, it's flooding on the road. Maybe some of you have experienced this. And then the other is the recent bridge collapse of the Francis Key Bridge. So we're looking at natural and then an infrastructure failure here. So again, we want to be able to bounce back from anything that could happen. That's why we're considering resilience. So resiliency is in the MCP goals and objectives specifically for safety and security and system and environmental preservation. So we're thinking about all modes of transportation, freight. We're thinking about emergency response, incident clearing times, resiliency to infrastructure risks, and environmental conditions. Increasing resilience of infrastructure to reduce flooding on roadways. We want to meet industry, state, and national standards. We want to support funding for transportation maintenance, reduce emissions and energy consumption, reduce stormwater impacts, apply green infrastructure techniques and projects, and maintain and improve our existing roads, transportation, infrastructure, and facilities. All right, so specifically resilience in the 2050 MTP, you'll see it within highway funds, within the project prioritization, which I'll go over in a little bit, and then maybe a resiliency contingency percent as well. Today, we're going to be proposing an umbrella resiliency policy to be applied to all the other policy categories, and then within transit funds, you might see that within electric vehicle infrastructure. So what are some of the economic benefits of considering resilience within our financial plan? So reduction in the cost of repairs, reduction in user costs from having a more resilient asset, and reduction in regional economic losses, local businesses after damage from climate events that have maybe been incurred and through the repair process as well. All right, so moving on to those policy statements. Policy statements are developed for category projects to correspond to project revenue, category expenditure set-asides and maintenance expenditures, TCC approved operational improvements, transit and non-motorized set-asides. Wycota went over those in her presentation earlier today. All right, and so we had previously proposed to TCC creating a separate resiliency policy set-aside. However, that was not approved, but I think that actually resulted in a better proposal here to have resilience as an umbrella policy. So meaning that resilience would be incorporated into all the other approved ones using the language, the project considers solutions to address natural and man-made hazards as part of resilience measures that result in minimum damage to social well-being, the economy, and the environment. So again, it links back to that federal highway definition. Why do we want to include resiliency within these specific other policy set-asides, or what could that look like? For operations and maintenance, you're thinking about the life cycle of material. So you maybe will consider soil erosion, flooding, temperature. How does that impact the road? Redundancy to avoid supply chain disruption. For bike and pedestrian, we want to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Biking, walking, a great way to do that. Green infrastructure to protect bike paths from flooding. Transit, reducing greenhouse gas emissions through electric vehicles and reduction of single occupant vehicles. So it's really just that extra incentive to incorporate these ideas that will be discussed throughout the MTP into projects. Who is doing this? Who is incorporating resilience into their financial plan? And you'll see that within Florida MPOs. In 2022, Florida DOT released a great report about integrating resiliency into the transportation planning process and specifically financial feasibility. So in Sarasota and Manatee MPO, they developed a $75 million box fund to address flooding, protect critical infrastructure. North Florida TPO put aside funding for a resilience program to identify mitigation measures or design changes. Hillsborough TPO developed an investment program for vulnerability reduction, specifically stormwater and drainage. Space Coast MPO, in their long-range transportation plan, used three security strategies to ensure capacity necessary for large-scale evacuation, such as prevention and protection, redundancy, and recovery. So money is being allocated. We're seeing this in Florida, and I think Georgia is following that lead. And also in this report, many MPOs noted that dedicated funding was necessary for these activities. It's very helpful. All right. So that is the policy statement, thinking about how we can incorporate policy resilience into those other policy statements. I'm going to move on to the Federal Highway Administration greenhouse gas rule update. So earlier this year, we were told that we would have to report on a reductions plan for our MPO after GDOT created their plan. However, at this time, MPOs are not required to submit targets and reports. This is because 22 states filed two lawsuits challenging the rule. FHWA agreed to temporarily not seek enforcement of the February 1st deadline for state DOTs through March 29th. So we did not see any reports from Georgia DOT. On March 27th, the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Texas vacated and remanded the final rule to DOT, in effect nullifying it. So again, at this time, state and MPOs are not required to submit these initial targets and reports at this time, as we thought we would have to at the beginning of this year. And we're still waiting to hear more from FHWA. All right. And so just moving into the last bit of this presentation, project prioritization. So we're in the tier two of prioritizing projects now. And to do this, I'm using the FHWA Vulnerability Assessment Scoring Tool, or VAST, for one composite score. So FHWA considers vulnerability as exposure, sensitivity, and adaptive capacity. So are you experiencing it? How do you experience it? Can you bounce back? Well, how much is that going to impact you? We have formed an assessment team that has been meeting since December of last year to help determine these inputs. Things we're considering in the tool, you know, the evacuation routes, and then also road redundancy. Do we have an alternative route available? So just some simple examples here. You know, if you're looking at the I-95 auxiliary lane, is it for that project specifically, is I-95 an evacuation route? No. However, at the state route 204 interchange, yes, that does cross over an evacuation route. They're pretty simple there. Road redundancy. Again, for I-95, do you have another road that can be used? Yes, Highway 17, potentially. All right. And then these are just some screenshots of our VAST tool here, looking at exposure. So this is a multifaceted process. I'd love to talk with you more in depth if you have questions. But this is just showing that we're looking at temperature, precipitation, sea level rise, storm surge, wind, very specific parts of that. You input the scores here, it will weight them, and then it will give you a composite score once those are added in with the sensitivity and adaptive capacity indicators as well, which our team just decided about 2 weeks ago. So we're still working on inputting those. But this will give us one big score. And the great part about using this tool is that it can be replicated. This Excel sheet, it's a macro Excel sheet. It comes straight from FHWA. And it can be replicated in previous report or future long range plans based on what we've done here, which is great. All right, and with that, I'll take any questions. Thank you.
All right, any questions? Thank you, ma'am. All right, let's move on to the next part of the presentation.
Okay, I will be speaking about equity in the 2050 MTP. And then this is tier three of that project prioritization process. So moving into a more federal definition of what equity is kind of like a base of what we're doing for our plans on a local level. The federal government defines equity as the consistent and systematic, fair, just, and impartial treatment of all individuals. And equitable development aims to meet the needs of all communities and community members. The U.S. Department of Transportation defines equity as seeking fairness and mobility and accessibility to meet the needs of all community members. And we have components of that we have done already through our Title VI plan. We have an environmental justice plan, language assistance plan. So we have already laid the groundwork for some of that equity work in previous years through some of those plans. And so now we're just advancing forward with more equity measures. And this is just a personal definition of how equity is distinct from equality, in my opinion. And that is, equity is distinct from equality in that it heavily considers historical, societal, and individual context in decision making. And so we wanted to incorporate that more into the 2050 MTP and have this image is just an example of some of what I'm describing. So why even include equity in transportation? And I see it as that we have a duty to create a transportation system that is helpful and accessible to all travelers and residents, no matter what mode of transportation they use. And so we want to avoid situations like this where our roadways may be hostile to people outside of cars. We want to avoid situations like this in which our sidewalk and transportation system isn't useful for or usable for all people of all abilities. And we want to avoid situations like this, where sometimes our transportation system can divide the community instead of connect the community. And so a transportation system is only equitable if it is safe, useful, and offers connections for all people. And also, it's not impossible. I'm using an example of the Vision Zero plan in Hoboken. They actually achieved their Vision Zero goal. And this is just a small graphic of some of what they did to achieve that goal, but I just want to show that this work, even though it seems like a lot, it's not impossible. And then I also see that within our community itself, we're seeing more equity being included into our transportation process. So we see that with the Reconnecting Community grants that City of Savannah got and the Vision Zero plans that are starting to be drafted by the different communities within our area. So how is equity being incorporated into this plan? It's being incorporated through our goals and objectives. So we have goals and objectives related to safety and security within our transportation system, and then accessibility, mobility, and connectivity. It's also within our needs assessment. So our non-motorized transportation plan is going to be heavily incorporated into our 2050 MTP, especially through that Vision 2050 list, and then also our public involvement through some of our surveys and when we go out within the community. It'll also be incorporated in our equity prioritization process for our projects, and I'll discuss that in more detail in subsequent slides. And then also within our financial investments. So we're going to be devoting highway funds to support transit developments and through our transit set aside, devoting more highway funds for bike and pedestrian and trail projects, and then additionally have a bike and pedestrian set aside. And then also including transit investments to create transit, bike, and pedestrian connections. So now we're moving into how we are prioritizing the highway projects within the 2050 MTP and how we're using equity to prioritize those projects. So within the scoring framework, we are prioritizing projects with bike and pedestrian access so we can kind of push more of those complete streets where they're accessible through multiple modes of transportation, improving connectivity to vital resources such as hospitals, grocery stores, those things. And then also improving safety, so improving protective features that are known to reduce traffic accidents. And that's because we know that traffic accidents are also inequitable. Some communities experience more safety issues than others. And so the basic idea behind this project prioritization process was to promote projects that are helpful for all types of travel, whether it be by car, bike, or foot, and also to acknowledge and develop the multiple ways that a person may travel. With that, this is a snapshot of what the prioritization looks like. So we are considering transit connection and access. So are these projects in close proximity to transit stops, and do they have bike and pedestrian improvements so that someone can more easily walk to a bus stop? And then we included this just because a lot of people who use transit do not own a car, and so we want our infrastructure improvements to include bike and pedestrian improvements so people can better access other forms of transportation. Bike and pedestrian improvements, we also are giving more points to those projects that do have those bike and pedestrian improvements, again, to better prioritize those projects that include more ways to travel on a road safely. And we're also considering those projects' proximity to zero-car households, to existing bike and pedestrian infrastructure, and planned bike and pedestrian infrastructure. We're also looking at accessibility and connection to critical features such as hospitals, grocery stores, libraries, and schools. And so those projects that are in close proximity to those critical facilities will receive a higher score than those projects that are further away from those. And then I also added a thought that adding road connections alone may not improve equity, especially if that roadway expansion may lead to higher speeds and traffic volumes. And it might make critical facilities less accessible, but again, these projects are at the very beginning stage, so that's just an initial thought I had while looking at these projects and looking at the scoring system. And then we're also looking at these projects' proximity to high poverty tracts. So are these projects and are these investments going into communities that are experiencing high poverty? And then we're also looking at medians. And so I included this because research shows that medians with marked crosswalks reduce pedestrian crashes by 46%, and pedestrian refuge islands reduce pedestrian crashes by 56%. So there's strong evidence to show that it increases safety. And I wanted to note this because it's important. So since interstate projects aren't accessible by all modes of transportation, and they kind of have the side effect of splitting communities, within the equity scoring system, interstate projects would receive an equity score of 0. So just an example of what this process would look like. This is a map of our projects, and then this is a map of schools. And each dot is a school, and then these bubbles around them are buffers. And so we're prioritizing the projects that intersect with these bubbles. So the projects that intersect or are very close to schools will receive a higher score than projects that are further from schools, for example. So additional methods to incorporate equity in the planning process. So while reviewing this, I thought maybe it was a good idea to start these conversations about equity a little bit earlier. I think everyone in this room is thinking about equity, is involving equity within their planning process. And so I think it's a great idea to kind of bring all those resources together and start those conversations earlier, especially since the MPO has access to a lot of equity data. And so from the beginning of a project selection process or a project identification process, it might be a good idea to bake in that equity from the beginning. And so as MPO member or within the core MPO, we can definitely assist as an educational arm to assist in that equity planning. And then these are just some of the data sources that I received a lot of the equity data from. I would say USDOT ETC Explorer has been extremely helpful in that process, but then there are some others that have informed this prioritization process too that I think are great to look into, and I'm happy to discuss and share those resources with anyone on the board as well. And these are all available and free too, so that's another great thing about these resources. And so that is the end of this presentation. Are there any questions?
Questions? All right, Ms. Massimo.
Not a question per se, but one thing that I'd like that we'll send over and share with you is when we think about equity, we often think about equity in terms of location and geography and place, yeah, those kinds of things. There's some really interesting work around equity and design. So yeah, literally in how projects are actually designed to influence access and all those kinds of things, but in some really different ways. And I'll send that over to you because I just think that would be an interesting thing for us to incorporate in, yeah, this.
Most definitely.
Thank you. Thank you.
Chairman, go ahead.
So when you talk about integrating the equity component into project selection, are those projects standalone projects, or is they a kind of a scoring criteria when you use score projects generally that you know, it's scored high in, you know, let's say the resilience and the equity part, or are they projects that are targeted on their own based on the equity merit?
So the process that we're using is that we're looking at each individual project, and then we're looking at their proximity to like critical features, or we're reading the project descriptions and seeing do they include a median or is this a safety project, and then we're giving a score based off of that.
All right, any other questions?
All right, thank you. Scores are weighted also, just so that you know, for resiliency and equity. It's weighted.
All right. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Chairman?
Yes, ma'am.
This is Dr. Shabazz again. I just want to make a comment to the presenter and thanking her and the staff folks to include where poverty is a component in them making decisions moving forward. So I just wanted to make that statement with equity and equality. Thank you all so much for doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
Let's move on.
I will be really quick about the congestion management process. As you can see, this draft 3, a congestion management report, is attached. And then we just got the comments back from Federal Highway Administration yesterday. We're addressing the comments right now. So basically, the congestion management process is we used a lot of data and a model, and then we find out where the congestion areas are located. And then we define the congestion mitigation strategies. So for this 2024, we actually added like vehicle hours of delays or cost of congestion, percent of non-single vehicle occupant vehicle type, is etc. So we have some new funding, not funding sources, some data sources, and then using those, and we find out some of the locations. So the red ones and orange ones are the congested areas. So these are from the travel demand model. Those would be the input, and this input will be compared with like observed congestion, basically your experience. Like I experience congestion on US 17 every day because I travel on US 17. So I know where it is. Okay, so I check this to see whether it's validate my experience. And then we find these locations and then we find congestion mitigation strategies. So for now, for example, these mostly congested locations, some of these locations already have projects to address those, to address them. But some of those don't. And then we need to define, that's where the project selection comes in. And also like operational improvements. So those would be the things that we are working on. So just like I indicated, this is like a general congestion mitigation. But the comments that we got from Federal Highway Administration is like, okay, so you identify these top congested locations, but what specific measures do you have? So that part we are working on right now. So just want to let you know that congestion management process, it is fitting into the 2050, in terms of project selection and project prioritization. So fit into all of that. It will be one of those supporting plans or supporting document, for the 2050 MTP. Any questions on this?
Questions? Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's move to non-motorized.
I will make this presentation brief. So CORE MPO is updating the non-motorized transportation plan, which addresses the development of bike and pedestrian infrastructure in the CORE MPO planning area. And the goal of this plan is to identify new projects, assess the needs of the community, and set new goals for bike and pedestrian infrastructure. So we're aiming to adopt this plan in June 2024, but this is kind of an optimistic timeline, especially with all the work we're putting in into the MTP. So we might have to move the adoption date a little bit later. So in terms of the main updates, staff hosted a steering committee meeting on April 10th to discuss equity within the 2050 MTP. And then we also discussed the scoring methodology of the non-motorized transportation plan. So how do we want to prioritize those bike and pedestrian projects that we've identified? So the final document is currently being drafted to include all of these discussions around data, research, and the input that we received on this plan. Additionally, Genesis updated the cost estimations from the projects that were in the 2014 version of the non-motorized transportation plan, and then the scoring methodology has been developed. So about the scoring methodology, which will be the meat of this presentation, the data being used to score the projects is from multiple sources, but mainly from the U.S. Department of Transportation's Equitable Transportation Community Explorer, which is extremely helpful. But then we also have other GIS data from SAGES and NewMetric as well. So we are using this data to identify places that have high levels of transportation cost burden, poverty, proximity to high volume roads, and much more. This is just to name a few. And then we also have community data such as the location of schools and grocery stores from SAGES, and then crash data from NewMetric. And so the plan for this data is to overlay the bike and pedestrian projects that we identified over our crash data or over our community data to determine if the projects serve the needs of that area. So this is just an example of that. So these white lines are our identified bike and pedestrian projects. And underneath it is a map of drive time to points of interest in minutes. And so using this data, we can better prioritize the projects that intersect with the census tracts that have a shorter drive time to points of interest. So moving into the example scoring matrix that we discussed at our steering committee meeting, we're looking at factors such as crash incidents, speed limit, traffic volume, proximity to schools, and functional classification in terms of determining the safety of a project or if that project is improving safety within the area. We're also looking at equity factors such as proximity to public transit, zero vehicle households, transportation cost burden, and poverty. And if this looks very similar to the 2050 MTP scoring matrix, that's because it is very similar. So a lot of what we did for the non-motorized transportation plan directly informed the 2050 MTP. We're also looking into efficiency, such as average drive time to points of interest. So we want to prioritize projects that have those shorter drive times because we can easily add a bike path or a sidewalk that makes that road or that area have more bike and pedestrian accessibility to those places where there's a shorter distance to get to the things that they need. We're also looking at the existing bike and pedestrian network, and we want to ensure that we're filling the gaps within those networks. And we're also looking at commute data from the American Community Survey, seeing the census tracts where people are walking or biking or using public transit to get to work. And then we're also looking at bike and pedestrian volumes. We also have bonus points. So
the projects that are in closer proximity to Title I schools will receive a higher score than those that are further away. And then the projects that have protected facilities and they're physically separated from traffic would also receive a higher score. So this is the updated cost estimation methodology that Genesis developed. She used a tool from the Atlanta Regional Commission, and the tool was used to provide updated cost estimates for projects and to compare cost estimates comprised at the origination of the project, which were created in 2014, so 10 years ago. The new cost estimates rely on an inflation rate of 2% and have a default construction year of 2026, as depicted in this screenshot right here. And all projects were researched in Google Maps. Any projects that could not have their costs estimated via the tool were grown linearly using a 2% growth rate. And the county by default is Fulton County because that's the only county that that's because this tool only allows you to select Atlanta counties, but these are Savannah area projects. So these are still estimating the cost of Savannah area projects. It's just the tool is kind of restricted to some of the naming conventions. And all areas were set as urban. No right-of-way was used in any project calculations, and total costs include preliminary engineering, construction, and contingency. And are there any questions?
Questions? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay, I will present this item, and I'm just very glad that because we started the reapportionment process last February, and I really see the light at the end of the tunnel because we adopt the MOU. The next one is the bylaws. So we hope to have the bylaws updated in June. But before I do that, I just want to go back to the MPA boundary because at the last meeting, Bay and Mr. Plumbo really didn't want to even if Bryan County doesn't want to be a part of us, we want to give them a chance or something. So we need to find out the process. So we did contact FHWF that they did some research and this is the response. So they said the answer is yes. MPA boundaries may be revised at any time subject to agreement between the MPO and the governor. The requirement to evaluate the MPA boundary after each census is to help ensure that MPAs are evaluated at least once every decade. Basically we are, we should be able to, revise our boundary again, even after the governor approved our boundary. But I just want to let you know that this is a big undertaking. I mean, we have been working on this for over a year and we just reached the like a milestone MOU. So you know, how that is impacting us. And also if we adopt the 2050 MTP in August, if we revise our boundary again, we have to amend the MTP, amend the UPWP, amend the TIP. Everything. So the staff suggestion is like, let's stick to like census. So every 10 years we do this. So let's not do this, but we can help the Bryan County if they want to move forward because we identify the projects already. It's just we cannot spend our money. So they can coordinate it with GDOT so that GDOT can allocate the statewide funds for them. But for the boundary, I want to let you know this is the FHW response. Yes, you can revise it, but staff suggestion is no, we don't want to revise it. So this is just a follow up on that. And then the bylaws update, we talked about this several times. So hopefully we will adopt the bylaws in June, but I just want to show you some of the changes that I've made and very thanks. I'm very grateful to the chairman and the county manager to tell me to have a draft. On this document so that people know that this is still work in progress. So I just want to let you know we added that in. So the MPO organization, so of course, the boundary is part of the bylaws as well. So we update the boundary over here, in the bylaws. And then under the organization structures, remember we consolidated ACAT and the CEC into the Transportation Equity and the Public Involvement Advisory Committee. So we have to document all of that organizational structure. And we also added in the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. So we add that in the structure over here. And so it might be easier to see from this picture. You can see we added in the Transportation Equity and Public Involvement Committee and the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. So that's part of the bylaws. And in terms of Quorum Pool Board, for the voting members, since the CEC, and let me just minimize this a little bit. CEC and ACAT are consolidated, so they will be an advisory committee. So their chairmen will no longer be the voting members, on the MPO board. But we also want to, like reduce the numbers, So we want, because we have a new members, so what we want to keep the total voting members in control. Because we are adding one voting member from Effingham County. Effingham County currently has one member, but they have three jurisdictions. So they probably will share one voting seat over here. So municipal voting member agreed upon by Effingham County and its municipalities. So who's going to like rotate each year? And then Bryan County, even if the Northern Bryan County will not be a part of us, but they still have about 13,000 people living within the Savannah urbanized area. So eventually, if they pay for the membership dues, they will have a voting seat on our MPO board. And then for CAT currently, Georgia Ports Authority has one voting seat and, Airport Commission has one voting seat, but CAT has two voting seats right now. So we decided that probably we should treat the automotive representatives equally. So we will reduce the CAT seat to one, but that seat will be taken over by the chairman or the designee because the chairman is the elected board. So this is just still in the draft form. And then for the duties and the responsibilities, currently each municipal voting member appoints a CEC member since we are no longer going to have a CEC committee. So this responsibility has been removed. So there's no way to appoint a CEC members anymore. And then also officers and organizations, remember we started to implement the election because currently the chairman from Chatham County Commission is automatically the chairman, and we have decided that we would do the election. An election will take place at the last meeting of each calendar year. And the vice chair. So the positions would be chairman and the vice chairman, and it will be elected. And then also we added in the language because these are just based on the input that I received. So only elected officials are eligible for positions of chairman and a vice chairman. So the mayor might appoint like a city manager, but city manager wouldn't be eligible to be elected. So only like county commission, county commissioners and the mayors or city council members will be eligible for elected officials. And then it will be the election will be held each year. So your term will be 1 year. So basically you preside over six meetings in a year. So these are some of the changes. And then also the other thing is like the privilege, the chairman shall cause a notice to be sent to all members for the meeting 7 calendar days. So we don't think the chairman needs to do that. So basically the quorum PO members, so we serve as your secretary. We will send out the meeting notifications. So that has been updated over there. This is just pertaining to this quorum pool board, but for the other committees, we also changed because currently in this board, the quorum is like 1/3 of the member plus one, but all the other committees have is a random like 5 or 30%. So we actually unified that to all say 1/3 of the voting members plus one. That's a quorum. And another thing that we changed is because you all have a different election time frame. Some of us in the fiscal year, some of us calendar year, we standardize that all end of the calendar year. So, and then also, like, no action can be taken until a quorum is present. We changed that. It says no business can be conducted, so we changed that to no action. No actions can be taken until a quorum is. So if you have like status report, you can still move on. You can still go on like that. So we will continue to work on this after we have this financially constrained plan played out. And then we will work on this where we would try to schedule separate meetings with like TCC and the CEC and ACAT. We have a consolidated meeting and so that we can finalize their portion of the bylaws. So hopefully in June and we will adopt this. So when we adopt the bylaws and we will forward the all the MOU with all the signatures collected and then the bylaws to GDOT for final execution, hopefully in June. Any questions on this?
Any questions, sir? All right, no questions.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let us move on. We're getting ready now for...
Is Katie online?
GDOT? Is she online?
Is Katie online? So, okay, all the informational reports are attached over here, but since Katie is not online, I think that Chatham County and the CAT are here, so.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, most of our projects are listed here. Any notable updates, Garrard Avenue improvements. We are moving into the final design phase on that project. And then I'd also like to note for Chevis Road Improvement Project, we've got the public information open house on May 16th for that project. So if you want to, you know, make sure folks are aware of that and they want to come out and have input on the project, that's going to be May 16th from 4 to 7 at the Coastal Botanical Gardens. And then we also are anticipating having the public information open house for the I-16 at Jimmy DeLoach Parkway project. We're working on that one in conjunction with Bloomingdale, and so we're thinking that PIOH is going to be in June. So those are just some updates. We also have some other projects listed here. Are there any questions on any of the county projects that are listed?
So.
Thank y'all.
So. All right.
Morning, Mr. Chairman and board members. Joe Sharehouse with the City of Savannah. Project Doreen continues to move forward. We have approved the environmental justice items that need to proceed. So we're commencing that work and look forward to completing that item as required by Federal Highway. We continue work on Delessis Avenue with utility relocation and existing stormwater infrastructure. We're about 20% completed with that project and look forward to continuing on schedule. The Truman Linear Trail Phase 2B will start construction this month and should last about 18 months total. So we're looking forward to finishing this project in the fourth quarter of 2025. Middle Grown Road, which is also a segment of the Tide to Town Trail Network, the RFQ for design closed beginning of this year, and we look forward to procuring that service the summer of this year. We're also excited that this design service will begin in the fall and will closely coordinate with Hunter Army Airfield and the Georgia Southern Armstrong campus with the $178 million investment of the new dental school on the Triangle property, which is located adjacent to this trail network. So we're excited to coordinate with both of those large entities to make sure that it integrates with both of those developments. The I-16 ramp removal project, at this recent State Transportation Board meeting, Commissioner McMurray highlighted the Reconnecting Communities grant award at $1.8 million. And we're excited for GDOT to continue to lead the concept and feasibility update of the interchange modification report of that I-16 ramp remover project. And with that, that's an update on the City of Savannah's current projects.
All right, any questions? Thank you, sir. The airport.
Thank you. Yeah, we have two projects that are under active construction. The first project is we're expanding our TSA security checkpoint to 6 lanes, and we expect substantial completion of that project in the fall of 2024. And our second project is expanding our fuel storage facility by 120,000 gallons, and that project is expected to be completed in early 2025.
All right, any questions? Thank you. Chatham Area Transit.
Good afternoon. Mary Moskowitz with Chatham Area Transit. Our items are presented on the agenda, the report here. Some updates on the Savannah Bells hybrid ferry. The IFB did close, and we are reviewing those bids and hope to bring that to back to the board later this summer for selection. On our electric bus replacement, that did go to our board, and we were authorized to purchase 2 new buses. We are also applying for the FY24-53-39 funds for additional replacement electric buses. On the installation of the charging stations, that was anticipated to be completed by Georgia Power at the end of this month. There has been some delay in construction, so it'll be a few more weeks before we have those charging stations available at our depot. In addition to the items on the report, we are also having a public hearing on May 13th to discuss the site selection for our paratransit and microtransit maintenance facility. That concludes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anybody from?
Okay, I don't think we have any more informational items. The TIP funding, we got updates, and we keep tracking of that. I just want to mention one thing, because the chairman mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, the TIP administrative modification that we processed. We currently have 2 projects that have HIP funds. One is Los Rato Creek Bridge replacement, and another one is the Chatham County's I-16 at Little Necker Road. Those 2 projects. But those the HIP funds are lapsing on September 30th. So based on the estimates and the GDOT and the Chatham County development schedule, it's impossible to get the funds authorized by September 30th. So we don't want to lose those funds. We don't want the funds lapsing. So we have to reallocate the funds to projects that can available to take it. So we checked the TIP, and the project Durain is only one that can take that funds. It's about $300,000. So you can see over here. So basically, project Durain in the preliminary engineering, just for the additional environmental justice, you have about $1.2 million. So we replaced that funding code. So about 800 will be still Y230, and then the HIP funds 308 has been reallocated to Project Durain, so that we don't have that funds lapse. But the released Y230 funds will still stay in our area, so that we can use the funds. And actually, I'm also very glad to report to you, because according to GDOT, ARC and the Quorum PO are the only 2 MPOs that don't have any funds lapsed, right? So we are one of those success stories, just because we can just we have projects that can just use the lapsing funds. But for the Los Rato Creek Bridge and the Chatham County's I-16, we are still in the process of identifying new funding sources. So basically, these released Y230 funds, we will ask GDOT whether we can just move them to a later year to be allocated to those projects. But if not, and we will try to find and the funding source. So just want to let you know that this is one of the changes that Chairman mentioned over here. Another thing I want to mention is we actually we attach the funding opportunities so our jurisdictions can apply for these funds and if whenever we know the funding availabilities. So one of these is this ATIP funds. So we are working with GDOT. We forward the information to City of Savannah. So City of Savannah is working with the Coastal Regional Commission. So CRC is going to submit a big grant application on behalf of us in our region because the federal government encourages federal cooperation. So last time I talked with the City of Savannah, they are going to use do a heritage trail, so it will be included in the CRC's grant application for this ATIP. Another thing I want to mention is Anna and I attended the GAMPO conference, and Anna did a very good, excellent job in doing the presentation. But one more thing that we learned over there is there is this federal land access program in Georgia. So basically, the local jurisdictions apply for these funds for resurfacing or maintenance for roadways. So it's similar like LMIG, but they have a different application cycle and different like match requirement. So we are going to do research on this and check out the inventory of our land, federal land areas in our area, and then find out which roadways are eligible. So and then we report back to you. So if it's in Chatham County, if it's in FEM County, Bryan County, so you will have additional funds because what we learned is this pot of money with zero competition. So the possibility of getting it very very high. So just want to let you know these are some of the additional information we attached via notices. And we also have somebody from Pembroke this morning. He wants to talk to you about the boundary. We give him like 3 minutes.
I'll be really brief. Chris Benson, I'm the city administrator for the city of Pembroke, and I just wanted to thank the core MPO board and their staff for initially making the attempt to incorporate the North Bryan area or Bryan County's entire boundary into the initial MPO. I understand that there may have been some reservations from the county and they're not interested this go around, but we just wanted to thank you for making an attempt to incorporate it in the planning process. I've got some government background from Florida with MPOs, and I just value that process that it brings to especially small communities that maybe don't have those resources, but also that have a regional impact that impacts our community coming through it. So I just want to thank you guys.
Okay. Now, are we going to be working on with the governor's office to incorporate to the north side?
Well, the city's interested.
So you have to get the county commission to get interested?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So y'all will let us know what's
I'll
going
do my
on
best.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And I understand. In fact, I know. Okay. Because I've been in those meetings. What needs to happen, but internally y'all have to straighten that out and then you can come. But like you said, I'm trying to remember my calendar off the top of my head. All right. There's somebody from GDOT who's going to do, a virtual presentation on Monday, right? On the 6th?
Oh, no. On the 6th, because the quorum PO has to be federally certified before we receive the federal dollars.
Right.
So FHWA is kicking off the certification review process next week, next Monday. So you are invited. So they want to invite the quorum PO chairman so that you know what is going on. So basically, FHWA, FTA, and GDOT will find fault with us.
The reason I bring that up. Is because you have the link. Do you all have the link?
Yes.
All right. Why don't you all make sure you give it to Bryan County and City of Pembroke?
Oh no, this certification reviews is not that.
He's going to be talking about how'd that thing go.
It's a certification review, so basically.
I understand. Yeah. I understand, but I'm talking about the process that's going to be needed for them to get with GDOT and the governor and get
Yeah, they need to
straighten out in Bryan County.
What we can do just in short is we basically can get with the folks in Pembroke and talk to them about the MPO process and what we can and things of that nature. But with regards to dealing with the boundary and that, that really is a different ball game. Because when you start adjusting the boundaries, it's not just, oh, we're going to change the boundary. You've got to deal with the populations within that boundary. The census basically is a good lens because you got your population information and all that work is done. When you go in and try to do the adjustment in the middle, then somebody's going to have to come up with some money to deal with doing almost like a mini census within that area so that we can verify what those numbers are. So that's one of the challenges of not participating on the front end. I mean, if they came in and said, you know, in the next month or so, yes, we want to be a part of the MPO. Well, we probably could adjust it to the original boundaries because we've already got that information and we haven't adopted the other documents that go with that boundary. But after everything is adopted, it would be very, very challenging and we would bill that jurisdiction for those costs. You'd have to pay for the mini census, you have to weigh in all of that. But as far as you participating to know what's going on, if you need us to, you know, any of our assistance for any of the state projects you might be working on, we will be glad to work with you to help in any way that we can. But I just wanted to be clear about what some of the challenges are with doing this in the middle and some of the costs that would come with that.
And I just wanted that to come out because I think you need to know. And again, as chairman of the MPO, I'm not getting involved in Bryan County and Pembroke's business. Okay. Y'all have to duke that out in the back room and then come out here in the front room and tell us what y'all are doing. Okay. I just want you to know that. All right. So, Chief Offridge, all right. So you can get with the director knows and get to the information that I'm talking about. Okay. All right. Anything else?
No.
All right, so anything from any member? All right, our next core MPO board meeting will be June the 26th at 10 o'clock. All right, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Probably motion is second. Are you ready for the question? Question, please start to my left. Give me your vote.
Milton, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Callanan, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Turner, yes.
Scholar, yes.
Bigler, yes.
Jarrett, yes.
Means, yes.
The chairman, yes.